A racist, a bigot, and a misogynist. Those are just some of the explosive claims made against President Trump by his longtime associate and former White House advisor Omarosa Manigault Newman in her new book, Unhinged. Her relationship with the president began in 2003 when she was a contestant on the first season of the reality TV show The Apprentice. She joined the Trump campaign in 2016 as director of African American outreach and went on to become the highest ranking African American in the West Wing until she was fired last December. And Omarosa Manigault Newman joins us now. Thank you for being at the NewsHour.
I'm so glad to be here with you, Judy.
So you have gotten the president's attention
today and yesterday. He has come out with a string of comments calling you lowlife, I'm quoting, wacky, that he rarely saw you. He heard you were nasty to people, that you constantly missed work. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says you lack character and integrity, and the book is riddled with lies, and you're trying to profit off of them.
It's fascinating that the book isn't even out, so she hasn't read it, so she wouldn't know what's in the book. But moreover, I think that it's interesting that he also insults a lot of African Americans with those same types of slurs and words, but that's the way he is, unfortunately.
But after all those years of knowing him, surprised that he would come down so hard on you?
Yes, somewhat, because we had a very close relationship, as you stated at the open. I met him in 2003. I was still in my 20s, and I wanted to be like him. I grew up in poverty, so I thought, I want to be a billionaire one day. I'll go and work for Donald Trump. I'll go try to be on The Apprentice and be successful. But 15 years later, I never would imagine that he, as the president of the United States, would call me a lowlife.
What about what Sarah Sanders is saying? I mean, these are very strong words coming from her. Do you think she's misled, or is she purposely deceiving because the president is asking her to?
I think that she is taking guidance from him. I mean, she says whatever he tells her to say. And I would hope that she would kind of reconsider that position, because she is compromising herself every single day that she lies from the podium to the American people.
Well, let's take some of the charges you've made one by one.
Sure.
You're calling the president a racist. Mm-hmm. We know that there have been a number of statements from Donald Trump over the years that calling judges Mexicans who were of Mexican heritage, the years that he spent challenging President Obama about where he was born, those things that you were involved with the president, you were working with him, near him, close to him during all that time, those things didn't bother you enough to cause you to separate yourself from?
Well, that's one of the most dramatic scenes in Unhinged, where I talk about taking him to task for the birther movement. And he just kind of wrote it off as kind of political hyperbole, and he said it's par for the course when you're in politics. And I want it to be clear that in some ways I was very complicit by going into this White House and continuing some of those misconceptions and that lie that he continued to tell.
But you believed his explanation?
I did, because I had a blind spot where it came to Donald Trump. We were very close. And if he said it, in some ways I believed it.
Well, just following up on that, even when after he was president, the Charlottesville incident, the comment that they're talking about both sides, mm-hmm, bear blame. You write in the book about being troubled by that, but not enough to do anything about it. You went on television and defended him.
Yeah, I was asked by the president to go on television and defend him because there weren't many people from the administration that would. And it was before he equivocated both sides, good people on both sides. It would be a day or two later after that interview that I gave that he said those things. And so, of course, hindsight is 20/20. But when we look at the one-year anniversary of Charlottesville, I was just completely aggrieved, particularly over the weekend, thinking about Heather Heyer, the young woman who lost her life because, in some ways, this administration refused to act because there was a Democratic governor, and he said, just let them deal with it. They'll get the situation under control.
But a number of people are saying, why didn't you do something at the time it happened, at the time he made that statement?
Oh, and you know, I described very clearly what I did and how I reacted and responded. And as the only African-American voice, as loud as I screamed, there were 29 others who had a different opinion as to how we should approach Charlottesville.
Well, speaking of being the only African-American voice, the former chairman of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele, said yesterday that he was among a group of people who put together a list of highly qualified
African-American Republicans mm-hmm. who'd worked in previous White Houses who were prepared to go to work for Donald Trump, but that you blocked any of them from having a job opportunity.
I find that fascinating because on one hand, they say that I didn't have any power, I wasn't effective, I couldn't influence what happened in the White House. And then on the other hand, they say I had the ability to keep a long list of people out of the White House. You really can't have it both ways. In fact, he submitted that list during the transition. I wasn't in the White House yet. I wasn't making decisions. So that really actually undermines Reince Priebus' ability to actually put together an effective administration. Not me. I wasn't the head of presidential personnel in the White House. And so that assertion is kind of absurd when you think about it.
Women, the president's views of women. You write a number of disturbing things throughout the book, misogynistic things. But again, you write you had a blind spot.
I did.
Time after time after time.
I did. I also write about being a part of...
You seem very calm about it now, but...
Well, because, you know, I also write about being a part of what I call the Trump world cult. It's a cult of personality, and I was caught up in it. And I...
Is it being brainwashed? I mean, what is it?
I think when you're a part of a cult, you don't realize that what you're doing is completely against the grain, and it's undermining the very fabric of our democracy. I had no idea that supporting Donald Trump in the way that I was causing so much damage until I was on the outside and I had a good way to take a view of what was happening. But I accept full responsibility for what I did, and I have great regret for that.
But is it again, looking at it from the outside, it looks as if you're a woman of intelligence, a woman who could make her own decisions, but it's almost as if you were, you're saying you were blindly following instructions.
I was. You know, I lost my father. I talk about this in the first two chapters. My father was murdered when I was 7. And so in some ways, I was looking for a father figure, and I found that in Donald Trump. Here was a very successful billionaire, a real estate mogul, and I wanted to model myself after him. I was aspirational in the sense of looking at his success. And so, yes, I followed after some of the tenets that he outlined in so many of his successful books and some of the things that he enforced to be successful. But I was going down the wrong path following Donald Trump.
You write, this has gotten a lot of comment, about what you describe as the president's mental decline, setting aside questions about whether you're qualified to make that assessment. What are some specific examples of the difference in Donald Trump that you knew when you first met him in the early 2000s and recently?
Well, we would sit in the boardroom, and our boardrooms on The Apprentice would be 4 or 5 hours long. And Donald Trump was sharp. He was very perceptive. He was engaging. He had this expansive vocabulary, and he very seldomly took breaks. I mean, he could go 4 and 5 hours without blinking. Fast forward to 2017, and we're in the White House, and Donald Trump couldn't remember basic words or phrases. He couldn't read the legislation that was put in front of him.
How do you know this?
Because I was in the room, in the Oval Office, trying to brief him, for instance, when we were getting ready to pass the executive order for HBCUs, for instance, or briefing him for that famous listening session where he thought Frederick Douglass was still alive.
This is historically black.
Historically black colleges and universities.
But
absolutely.
How do you know? I mean, you were there with him. I'm not a doctor. In a hurry.
I'm not a doctor. I can only assess the Donald Trump that I knew in 2003 and the Donald Trump that I knew in 2017. And he is not the same man. In the morning, he would say one thing. By the afternoon, he was contradicting himself. And he wouldn't remember that he said the first thing. Just recently, he encouraged Republicans to pass an immigration bill, a fair immigration bill. And the next day, he said he never said to pass an immigration bill. I don't believe that that's just him lying. I really do believe that he has some sort of mental impairment and decline.
You also say, Omarosa Monigo, that you saw a lot of corruption the White House. Can you give us one specific example?
One of the biggest examples is this NDA that they came to us with and said that we couldn't talk about certain things that we saw. They wanted us to sign it, and they wanted to use that to kind of put fear in us to, if we saw things, to not blow the whistle, for instance, on things that we saw. And they demanded that everyone sign that. They didn't allow us to take it to lawyers to review. They wouldn't even allow us to email it, particularly to my lawyer. They said I had to sign it in the room right there and then and there. And I thought that that certainly was unethical, if not illegal.
But the president tweeted today that you've signed a non-disclosure agreement.
He's absolutely right. I signed a non-disclosure agreement back in 2003 for The Apprentice. I also signed one for the campaign. I never signed that draconian NDA that they presented to me when I walked into the White House, because I knew from my prior time in the White House, this was my second tour of duty working in the White House. I worked for the Clintons prior, that this was not something that was acceptable.
But again, you say a lot of corruption in the White House.
Oh,
what
God.
Are you referring to? And if, I mean, do you have evidence you're going to bring to the authorities?
Absolutely, but I will reserve that for the authorities. I will not have an opportunity to tell you the expanse of corruption that I observed while I was there. I prefer to do that, not in the court of public opinion, but in a court of law, because it's very, very serious.
So you're going to
have a very, very incredible, capable legal team, which is why I speak so strongly and assertively about the things that I've seen and the things that I intend to share with the American people in coming days.
You, in that light, you close out the book by writing, "Rest assured, there's an army of people who oppose President Trump and mm-hmm. his policies. They're working silently and tirelessly to make sure he does not cause harm to the Republic. Many are in his party, his administration, and even in his own family." Mm-hmm. Can you say who they are?
I prefer not. I think that it's important that as they continue to do their work to make sure that further damage to this country is not done, that they do that without being exposed. And I'm very proud of the people who are working behind the scenes to make sure Donald Trump is not allowed to continue to lead this country in an unfit manner.
You can't identify.
I would not ever,
the First Lady,
ever compromise
anyone?
Them in this way, because they are working tirelessly to just to really make sure that this country isn't damaged further.
Have you heard from people in the White House since you went public about the book?
Oh, yeah. I've heard the threats, the veiled threats, the very explicit threats. I've heard about the damaging that they've done and destroying of my personal property that they never returned to me in December. I've been waiting for them to return it, but they've decided not to after I did not sign that $15,000 a month agreement to go work in a fake job in the campaign.
They seem determined to shut you down in
oh, yeah.
some way.
They do want
do
to stop
Do you believe
me.
They will?
They won't be successful because, one, I have the truth on my side, but I have a significant amount, in fact, a treasure trove of multimedia backup for everything that's not only in Unhinged, but everything that I assert about Donald Trump.
Omarosa Monigo-Newman, the book is Unhinged, an insider's account of the Trump
And
White
you're
House.
In the book, Judy.
From when we worked,
you CNN.
Worked at CNN briefly. Thank
yes.
you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.